Because we're listener sponsored, we're non-corporate, non-commercial, and we depend on listeners like you going to the phone, taking the initiative, going to the phone, calling 516-620-3602, 516-620-3602. Say you want to become a WBAI buddy, a sustaining member, in the name of your favorite show or in the name of all WBAI programs. It may seem like a ghost town, but in reality, WBAI is broadcasting, you're listening, and we're a community radio station coming together at 99.5 FM, streaming at WBAI.org.
Hope my attitude won't bother you, but the day was long and my mood is blue. I couldn't think where else to go. I just dropped by to say hello. Nothing special that I want to say. I just came to pass the time of day. I've told my heart it mustn't show. I just dropped by to say hello.
The languid sound of Johnny Hartman. Good morning, Kathy Davis. Thank you for being there with me this morning. You in the studio, me at home. I bet you I did something Saturday night you didn't do, Kathy, or very few of our listeners. Are you there listening?
I am, and what? Thank you. Thank you for welcoming me.
And you know what I did Saturday night that I know you didn't do? I put on Fox and I watched his speech for the entire 2 hours.
Oh, you're a strong man.
You know what my conclusion is? And I'll go into details, but he's nuts. It's that simple. He's nuts. And I don't mean about the lies and the contradictions. I think he's nuts. First, let me say that I put it on a little early. CNN and MSNBC did not play it the speech live, so I had to put on Fox. And there the co-hosts were Steve Bannon and Jesse Walters. That's enough to make you nauseous. And they're so clever, though, because, as it's been well publicized, 6,300 people came into the huge stadium, and they made all sorts of excuses why they weren't there. But the on-the-street reporter from Fox, he said, they're pouring into the 19,000-seat arena. So he didn't say that they're not filling up. He just gave the price, the capacity of the arena. I thought, but gee, they're clever. They're pouring into the 19,000-seat arena. Now, he's nuts. Now, here's why. If it was a vaudeville act, I would have had the hook and pulled him out quickly. Just for sheer boredom. He did about a 15-minute riff that lost me, and I was wondering why he was doing it, about his having gone to West Point, the speech that he did, which I did not watch, and he talked about sitting in the sun and having to salute every two cadets, and so he saluted 600 times, he claimed. I doubt if he did. But he went on and on, and I said, why is he – here is a man running for re-election with a network audience on television and 6,300 people in the arena, and he's recapturing this speech. What wasted time. Well, it came down to the fact that apparently, and I hadn't even been aware of it, he did a cautious walk off the podium after he finished speaking. And apparently the media picked up on it, claiming that he showed age or whatever it was that they claimed. He had this pathological need to justify his slow walk down the plank after his day in the sun by going on and on and on about an ordeal that he was surrounded by other people that others went through, and I thought, well, he's nuts. He's using his airtime, his rally time, his time to inspire his fascist followers, and he was losing it. And I said, well, he's nuts. It was that simple. Of course, he did. The other extraordinary thing, in 2 hours as president, there were a couple of issues that might have been touched on more thoroughly. One was the pandemic, and the other was the racial uprising that's happening around the country. He almost trivialized the pandemic. At one point, he lied, said he saved 100,000 lives because of his response to what he called the China virus, the Kung Fu, racially inspired. But he made his reference to the pandemic. It sounded like the whole thing was an inconvenience rather than a national tragedy that's happening here. And when you contrast it with the information and the sanity that Governor Cuomo gave us each day, the difference was so startling. He had indicated no empathy, no plan for the future. Even at one point in his few minutes that he devoted to the pandemic, he said the numbers are going up because we're increasing the testing. I've told my team to stop the testing, as if that would lessen the epidemic, the spread. It was an extraordinary revelation of man out of touch. In terms of I don't think he ever referred to the nation witnessing the two murders that we saw, the shooting and the knee strangulation in Minnesota and Atlanta. He talked about looting and rioters and that they're tearing down statues of George Washington. And most of what he talked about, well, he went after Joe Biden with a cruelty. Joe Biden is his opponent, not an enemy of the American people. And he went after Biden's son, which is risky business considering how his children are showing up in American politics and the social scene. So my conclusion after watching for 2 hours, and after giving out medals, I deserve one for enduring the 2 hours, Margaret Mead gets celebrated for having gone to Samoa when no one else had gone there. But I watched Fox for 2 hours to see Trump, and he's nuts. I think he's I'm not a man of no values. He's not a kind man. All of those things that we know. But the I think he's, if he ever had it, he's lost it. And I'm not sure if he ever had it. That's my story about what I did on Saturday night. Now, we are still listener-sponsored, and we're still trying to get people to support us. And, you know, I've been doing this on Saturday night since Hector was a pup, and I don't know if there are new listeners on Monday, people that haven't heard before. So I may, if you're old folks that have been tuning in, this may be news to you, but it's always worth repeating. It's a story that I treasure about a young man who I met in 1968, when the Fortune Society had just begun. You say tomatoes, I say tomatoes. The Theater for the Forgotten invited me to come out to join them on Rikers Island, and they had a theater class there, and they were particularly interested in my meeting a young man named Stanley Eldridge, who they said had written beautiful poetry, 17-year-old kid. And I met Stanley Eldridge, and we talked, and he sent me some of his poems, and I couldn't believe how good they were. I mean, not just, this wasn't good inmate writing. This was real poetry. He is a poet from the soul. And he told me his background. He grew up as a runaway. He grew up in institutions, and he had ended up in Rikers. He came out after 7 months at Rikers, came to the Fortune Society. We found him employment, housing. He never went back to jail. Stanley died about 3 or 4 years ago, and I was blessed to be one of the eulogists at his memorial, and I read a couple of his poems, which I'm going to do now for you, because I think they're extraordinary, and it's also a way of raising money for BAI and you being the recipient of something that I treasure. Because we put together, when we got all of Stanley's poems, we put them together and had them published, called Return Me to My Mind, which was one of his poems. So when he came out of prison, having sold them, through, mostly through BAI, we were able to present him with a check, money for him to live on for the next 6 months to a year, even when he found a job. He had some money in the account. The poems were so good that Ossie Davis and Ruby Dee included it in there when they did their Evenings With. So did Eli Wallach and Ann Jackson. And George C. Scott, when I presented him with a book, read one of his poems on The Tonight Show. So I'm going to read a couple to you and then tell you how you can get the book and support BAI. When he was a kid and ran away, they took Stanley Eldridge as an 8-year-old, 7 or 8-year-old, and they put him in the Rockland County Institute for the Criminally Insane because they didn't know where to put a kid that age. And he hid out in the library to protect himself from physical and sexual assaults. And he was blessed with a librarian who became his mentor, his tutor, his friend. And he used to hide out under his desk. And he told me that's when he started writing poems, when he was at the Rockland County Hospital for Criminally Insane. And after he was on Rikers Island with these visitors from the Theater for the Forgotten, he wrote this poem. Now, this is a 17-year-old, tutored informally in a library, but not he never was schooled. This is a 17-year-old kid after the acting class, and he wrote this poem. There are people around, and they are free. You can tell the way they influence minutes and cross their legs. No secrets there, they seem to imply. The birds were silent, the walls limp with opportunity. Touch them, not cold. After the captain said they were crazy, I told him about Rockland, and he said I'd be president. This all followed a schedule in which these people smiled and gave us their first names to use. They didn't set the schedule, neither did I. But looking at them, I can see for miles a new concept replacing tomorrow with poignant freckles. Visitors by Stanley Eldridge. And here's one other poem he wrote. The black man is unique in that his feet are perpetually moving toward, around, about. Perfect rhythm, no doubt, tapping. He will eventually, dancing, get there. The black hand is forever climbing into rings, explaining things, fingerprinted, pushing brooms, defying grief in shadowy rooms, shaping destiny. The black face is constantly a pattern of history, eyes glowing, often for what might have been, only the black man's heart is always reaching, oh, I'm sorry, and apart, hungry for tomorrow, and sunshine full of sorrow, and unduly kind. The black mind is definitely moving, shipping clerks from scholarships, prophets, poets, playwrights, politicians, panthers, improving our black thing. And, you know, it makes you wonder of the gifts that are stifled of young men and young women who are coming from homes or neighborhoods where they get in trouble and never have the opportunity. And Stanley was bursting with talent and creativity. And I was blessed to have him as a friend right up until the end of his life. And he never went back to prison. So this book, Return Me to My Mind, we're offering in a package for $35 to BAI listeners. The other part of it is a CD of one of the programs I am most proud of, an interview of two men, Casimiro Torres and Barry Campbell, who grew up just like Stanley did in institutions run by the state. And it's called Systems Babies, and I think it's an appropriate package since Stanley was a systems baby, and like Casimiro and Barry Campbell, they were of the few that were able to break the cycle of the system destroying children. So Return Me to My Mind and the Systems Baby CD is available for $35. And I'm doing a departure from everybody else because the other day, so many people couldn't get through on the 516 number when I was doing a Saturday show. I said, email me, email me at droffenberg@fortunesociety.org. Give your phone number, and I will call you back during the day. And we raised a lot of money that way. So if you would like this $35 package, and the Stanley's poems are so beautiful and so poignant, I think it's a treasure unto itself. And so is the hour listening of Casimiro Torres and Barry Campbell. So D. Rothenberg, that's me, David Rothenberg, but it's my first initial, Rothenberg, at fortunesociety.org. Leave your phone number, and I'll arrange for you to have both of those. And I'll push the premium people to make sure they get out fast. And while you're calling, or not calling, emailing me, Barbara Streisand's on deck with a Andrew Lloyd Webber song from Sunset Boulevard, I think. Kathy, are we there?
Well, we are.
But Barbara's not?
Yeah, she's here too.
There she goes.
I don't know why I'm frightened. I know my way around here. The cardboard trees, the painted seas, the sound here. Yes, a world to rediscover, but I'm not in any hurry, and I need. But conversations in overcrowded hallways. The atmosphere as thrilling here as always. Feel the early morning madness. Feel the magic in the making. Why everything's as if we never goodbye. I've spent so many mornings just trying to resist you. I'm trembling now. You can't know how I've missed you. Miss the fairy tale adventure. Just today, but always. We'll have early morning now. knees. Don't ever, ever make me say goodbye.
Streisand, no one ever said she couldn't carry a tune, could they? Tomorrow's election day. I did it by absentee. I don't know why. I'm only a half a block away. But I thought it would be interesting. The one race that concerns me the most is the congressional seat in the Bronx. Jose Serrano has retired health conditions. He has served nobly for residents in the Bronx. And everyone thought that the very progressive, forward-looking councilman Richie Torres was going to be the heir apparent. Then Ruben Diaz, who's all senior, not junior. We love Ruben Diaz Jr., the Bronx Borough President. And sometimes name confusion can mess things up. Ruben Sr., who's a councilman and a bigot, is running against him. And we, you know, if it was just Diaz Sr. against Richie Torres, it would have been fine. But then several progressive outsiders, people outside the area, have joined in, and it may dissipate the progressive vote. Melissa Mark Viverito, who's the former speaker, and Assemblyman Michael Blake, all good people. But they should have all consolidated and picked one person. Didn't happen. And so there's a great danger that the Bronx will be represented in Washington by Ruben Diaz Sr. If it was Ruben Diaz Jr., I would have been ecstatic. But apples fell very far from the tree in this instance. If you want to be a BAI buddy, do you know what that means? That means we ask you now to give $10 or $15, and then every month for the next year, it will be taken out of your account because you'll be giving your credit card. And I keep pointing this out as one who is a BAI buddy. I think I'm in for $15 a month. When you get your credit card and all those things that you thought, why did I get that? And it totals up to several hundred dollars. That $15 is almost lost to you, but it's a mitzvah, a bonanza for WBAI. And I'll tell you why. If 100 people this morning decided to give $15 a month, that's $1,500 just from this morning. And maybe we could decrease these endless, boring fundraising drives. So in the name of fighting boredom and supporting listener-sponsored BAI, if you would email me this morning at drothenberg@fortunesociety.org, leave your phone number and say you want to be a buddy, or if you're concerned about just gender parity, you can be a sister. Just let's do it and get this nonsense over with. You know, our fundraisers usually start January 1st and end New Year's Eve. Endless and boring. I'll tell you another way you can support BAI. Kathy is. You know, this is Miracle Radio. I'm at home. Kathy, the engineer, is at the studio. It's the whole new world that we're living in. So that's why Barbara came in a little late. Our signals are not as fast or as rapid as they would be if we were together. Someday, Kathy, we're going to be together again. But here's Betty Walker with one of nine sketches from her Hello Seal CD. People say, why do you do this comedy stuff? This is serious times. Remember what Emma Goldman said, if I can't dance to it, I don't want to march to it. We're allowed to laugh. We're allowed to find some happiness amid the strain and the angst and all the problems, because if you give up laughter, there's no reason to stick around. So I'm delighted to have Betty Walker do one of her sketches, one of nine on her CD. And I'll tell you afterwards how you can get the whole kit and caboodle and support BAI at the same time. Betty, make me laugh. Go ahead.
Hello, Sal. It's me. Yeah, how are you? Oh, good. I'm glad. Yeah. Listen. Oh, Sal, I'm in terrible trouble, and you have to help me. Yeah. You're the only person in the world that can help me, Sal. I'm calling you from the bank. Yeah. Wait a minute, sir, before you scream at me. Wait a minute. I know last time you told me it was the last time, but wait a minute, Sale. When you hear the story, I'm telling you, this rotten bank had no right to bounce my checks this time. Don't say that, Sale. Please, don't call me chronic. No, I was entering every stub. I carried forward my balance from stub to stub. It was like a religion with me. No, this time I did keep a cushion. I did. What's the difference? It was a cushion. $12. No. Hold on 1 minute. No, you don't know what I went through this morning. You know, I had to take the kids and the dog to the bank. No, I ran here when I got the letter. Hold on 1 second. Don't ask what my kids are carrying on at the bank. Mama Chickie, hold on. Please, girls, leave that gentleman alone. Leave him alone. He's a bank guard. Leave him alone. Marilyn, get away from that. Don't touch that. Marilyn. Marilyn. That's a real gun. Sit down and read a withdrawal slip. Come on. Turn it over in the back. There's interesting things. Hello, Sil. Please, Sil, you have to help me. No. I have to... Huh? And round figures? $317.23. No, I tried. I can't. I can't get a loan. Please, Sil. You're my only friend with collateral, please. Please, sir, you have to... Oh, come on, Sil. You still have bonds from your wedding. Please, Sil. I'll pay you back. I'll pay you back over a period of 6 months, okay? I can't get a loan. I'm trying to tell you. No, because in the eyes of this bank, I'm worthless. Please, I just tried. I spoke to the man. The only way that you can get a loan from this rotten bank is so rotten here is if you can prove to this bank beyond the shadow of a doubt that you don't need it. Oh, I'm so aggravated. No, and on top of everything else, when I came here, the only officer, when I came in here, that was free to take my case was that officer that we both don't like. Yes, you do. You know him. The one that sits under George Washington's portrait. He's so mean to me. I said to him, I said, sir, did you have to bounce these checks? I said, couldn't you call me? I said, where is your human element? Oh, it cost $5 a check to bounce. $35. It's not my fault. I swear, Sale. No, you see, I issued a check in Pennsylvania, and it reached the bank prematurely because I calculated 8 days, and it got here in 6 days. An officer was so mean to me. I said to him, I said, why are you so mean? I said to him, I want to tell you something, sir. Your bank has plenty of commercials on television, and I watch them, and that man that advertises for you is so loving, and he's so warm, and he makes you feel that every branch is your mother's kitchen. And then when you get here, you're sitting here. Somewhere there's a lie going on. So, Sale, please, I'm going to come over to your house. Please get, huh? I can't tell my husband. I can't under any circumstances. Oh, please. This time, if he ever found out I did it again, he'd leave me in a minute. He wouldn't even stay for the children's sake this time. Yeah, no. Please, Sale, and aside from that, there are certain checks I issued. If he ever saw certain checks that... For instance, there was a check made out to Han and Han Garage for $32.50. It's a little garage the other side of the bridge. Do you know how my husband loves his car? Would you agree that my husband loves his car even more than his mother? Do you know what my husband would do to me if he ever found out that I drove his car home from my cousin's wedding in Worcester, Massachusetts, 250 miles with the emergency brake on? You're right. It wasn't easy.
I know there was something wrong, and I could put my finger on it. Please, Sal, please. Please, please, Sal, this is no time to analyze my marriage. I'm going to jail from the checks, and you're analyzing my marriage. You want to know the truth? There's another check, Sal. $321.23. I can't even tell you what it's for. If I tell you, do you swear that you're going to give me the money? Swear. Swear on your Sydney. Don't forget you swore. Sal, what I'm about to tell you might be a little hard for you to understand. I mean, you know, for a woman of my circumstance, I mean, you know, I'm an average woman who lives on limited amounts of table money. And, what I want you to understand is there's a series of events that led to the... All right. Sale. I own part of a horse. A horse. Don't call me megalomania.
Wait a minute, Seal. I'm not the only one who owns it. No. The whole Canasta group, we all bought a horse. Wait a minute, Seal. Listen to me a minute before you yell. Tutty Rosen's brother is in the feed business. So it so happens that one night, well, let me explain it to you. One night, we were all playing canasta at Tutty Rosen's. And her brother happened to call and he said, girls, quick, I found a horse that's been reduced. No, the whole horse complete cost us $975. And they gave us the saddle, yeah. No, what are you talking about, Seal? What do you mean for that price? What do you mean the horse must be hot? Wait a minute, Seal. I'm a mother of children. Would I ever have anything to do with a hot horse? Not at all. No. All right, I'll be honest with you. No, the reason the horse was reduced is this horse has a mental block. He's stubborn. He only runs in mud. No, so that's why all of us went to Pennsylvania to say hello to the horse. When we met the trainer, he explained to us. He said, girls... He said, I want to be honest with you. You look like perfectly nice girls, but if you don't mind, frankly, I would like to be paid a few months in advance. Because, he said, the truth of the matter is, I never dealt with a canasta group before. So I was the only one with the checkbook. That's the check I issued in Pennsylvania. The name of the horse? Listen, Sal, let me come over and make out the check for $400 just in case I forgot to add in a few other... Huh? The name of the horse? Why is the name of the horse important to you, Sal? Listen, let me... Huh? If I tell you the name of the horse, swear you're still going to give me the money. The name of the horse? The name of the horse... A seal's mouth. I told you you would get mad. No, it's not my fault. Tony Rosen said we should name it that. She said, girls, if this horse could ever run as fast as Seal talks, we got a winner. So, hello, Seal. Seal. Hello, Seal.
Well, it's called Hello, Seal, and that's one of nine sketches. And if you think you need some laughter in your life, or if you want to make a gift to someone, $35, email me at droffenberg@fortunesociety.org. Give your phone number, and I'll call you back, and you can get Betty Walker's Hello, Seal. They're already ready to be mailed, so there won't be a big time lapse. $35, droffenberg@fortunesociety.org. that little symbol at fortunesociety.org. Here's a book review. Annette Binder's The Vanishing Sky, published by Bloomsbury, is a poignant, sad, beautifully told novel. It's a tale that reveals how time and geography shapes a life and a family. Etta Huber is a devoted wife and a mother of two boys in a small German town at the time Hitler and the Nazi Party dominated everyone's life. This is a million miles away from World War II novels like Irwin Shaw's The Young Lions, in which slavish devotion to the Führer defines German men. Max Huber, still a teenager, the oldest Huber boy, has returned from the Eastern Front, his mind scrambled from the horrors of war, while his little brother George goes AWOL from a youth group that is witness to senseless slaughters. Etta Huber is a simple woman devoted to family for whom time and geography has shaped her life. I don't think it's a stretch, but Miss Binder's reflective story, and book notes tell us she was influenced because her father was a Hitler youth, but it insists that I consider how young mothers are facing the challenge of raising children today in America during a pandemic and exposed to the racial strife that permeates our nation while a clueless and cruel president dominates television and technological news. It's about time and place. It's ironic and it's unpredictable. This book is called The Vanishing Sky. I did an essay a couple of weeks ago on Saturday Morning in here about unmasked millennials, the fact that the most dominant group getting the virus are between 25 and 44, but that the most deaths are people over 65 because younger people respond more quickly or less devastated by it, but they are carriers. And I did an essay called Are Unmasked Millennials Killing Grandma? Because in my walking around the village in Chelsea, in the areas where I travel, and sometimes when I go to the castle in Harlem, that it's the 18 to 30-year-olds that are mostly not wearing the masks. And, of course, I got a little rush of emails saying, well, you can't blame it all on the millennials. And I didn't. And I said, I'm not blaming all millennials. I'm saying those that are not wearing the masks tend to be younger people who don't carry any sense of responsibility about would-be carriers. And I cited young people I talked to about it. And in response to the little rush of protest, I would suggest that people would be more concerned about the unmasked than my exposing their being unmasked, that there is a lack of responsibility to other people as well as to yourself, to people in your own family, in your own life, who could be devastated by it. Just as we were all concerned about the crowd of people going into that arena where the clueless Trump doesn't think wearing a mask is an issue. If we talk about it, we have to hold people responsible for not being concerned about folks around them. That's my point. I'm going to read we're going to do another pitch for you to support us. I wrote up my memoir. Used to be called autobiographies, now they're memoirs. And I'm going to read an excerpt from it and then tell you how you can get the book and the show name dropping that goes with it. When I was years ago, I went into Rahway Prison, State Prison in New Jersey, and designed a class. It was really just talking about current events, taking the New York Times, reading a story from that day's paper and ask for people for their opinions on the story to assess social and political commentary. And I was challenged, you're the teacher, you should tell us. And I said, no, the teacher's job is to get you to think and care about it. And it started out with a class of 10, but within 3 or 4 weeks, and I was bringing in outside guests, it was packed and it was interesting. It was right after the Supreme Court had declared the death penalty unconstitutional, and half my class were men who had been transferred from death row in Trenton to Rahway Prison, and they were the most political and active. It was interesting. and the most most responsive. So here's a segment from the book, from my book, which I'm going to tell you how you can get. There was an intense man named Reuben, always sitting in the front row, cocoa-skinned, bald, with glasses. He listened intently, but rarely spoke. In the many classes I've taught, I've always looked for the eager face, someone who is soaking up everything, even if they're not asking questions. Reuben was particularly responsive when guests would join me, like Judge Bruce Wright, who visited several times. All right, turn the page. Judge Wright would cancel his treasured Saturday morning tennis games to travel with me to Rahway and fascinated the students with his candor about the courts and racism in our society. One day after class, Reuben asked if I would call his agent. Reuben, why do you have an agent? That seemed an appropriate question to pose a man situated in a prison. Of course, I will call your agent, I said to him, but what kind of an agent is this? He told me he was writing a book, and I figured, why not? Everyone in here has a story to tell. I asked him to write down her name, address, and phone number. And by the way, Reuben, what is your full name? He said, Reuben Carter. I looked at him for a long minute and asked, are you the Reuben Carter they call Hurricane? That's me. I never had asked last names in the class, nor did I take attendance. It was all voluntary. I had no idea that the attentive young man in front of me was a former boxing champion. In 1999, when the Hurricane movie was released with Denzel Washington, who gave a deeply moving and memorable performance in the title role, I had heard that Reuben was going to be in New York City for some promotional interviews for the film. He had long since been cleared and released after several courtroom dramas. He was out of prison, living in Toronto. I called the film's publicity department and introduced myself as a host of a weekly radio program on WBAI in Manhattan. I requested an interview with Carter. Of course, the condescending and impatient publicist said, everyone does. We have him scheduled on PBS with Charlie Rose and with Good Morning America. And then she listed some other initials thrown in. I listened respectfully and said, Reuben and I go way back. Why not just ask him and let him make the decision? The impatient representative conceded to my logic. 10 minutes later, the call came. Reuben's anxious to appear on your radio program on WBAI. He arrived in the studio on a Saturday morning, and he looked like $1 million in a nifty suit with a professional look. And I told him that I appreciated his joining me, and he said, David, you were there when no one else was. We can't forget where we came from. By the way, you were taller then. No, Reuben, I said, I was standing up, and you were sitting down. Now it's in reverse. He was living in Canada, working with the Innocence Project, and delivering inspiring lectures. He and Tommy Trantino had bonded in Rahway, and theirs was a dramatic demonstration that black and white guys could work together to give inmates a united voice because both men were charismatic and had respect from other prisoners. They were able to create some alterations in the traditional apartheid of the joints they were in. Both Reuben and Tommy rejoined the human race in spite of prison's attempt to dehumanize them. And so that book is one part of the offer. The other is from I did a 90-minute show called Name Dropping, and it's the other part of my life, not the Fortune Society, but about my theater life. And that show, which is now on a CD, is a companion piece to the book, Fortune in Men's Eyes. So you can get the book, an autographed copy of the book, and Name Dropping. Here's a little segment from Name Dropping. And I want to tell you more about Hurricane after this plays.
Early working in the theater, I worked with two of the giants, and I understood the power of, I guess, of goodness. I worked with Julie Harris on two plays and Sir John Gielgud on three. You can't get better than that. With Julie Harris, it was shot in the dark. It was so long ago that Bill Shatner was thin. And Walter Matthau was her co-star. And then more recently, in recent years, she played Isaac Dinesen in a play called Lucifer's Child. What happens with a Julie Harris play is she's so concerned about everybody everybody that's around, the stage manager, the wardrobe mistress, she makes it a team and a family so that you want to do your best work because she creates that atmosphere. And with Sir John, I worked with him on three plays. The first was The School for Scandal. He came to New York. He directed it. He co-starred with Sir Ralph Richardson. The beautiful Geraldine McEwan made her Broadway debut in that. She's playing that ferocious nun in The Magdalene Sisters. Best movie of the year. But I thought, are all English people so nice and so wonderful? And I came to understand it's because Sir John created a spirit around the production that made it wonderful for everybody to work with. And then he did, Alex Cohn presented him in Ages of Man, his one-person show. I watched it so many times, he finally said to me, why don't you sit in the wings one night? And he got a stool just like that, and I sat and watched Sir John from the wings. Like, you're watching me now, I was watching him from there. The third show that we did together was the Burton Hamlet, which he directed. By the time that show went into rehearsal, John and David were old buddies. We had worked on two shows together in the year before. So after the first rehearsal of Hamlet, they do the reading of the play. The cast does a reading. Sir John comes over to me and says, I'm going to try and sound like John Gielgud. It usually ends up sounding more like Jackie Mason when I do. But he was very, very witty. He was all up there. And he came over to me and said, dear David, are you going to be in Toronto during the previews? And I said, well, mostly, Sir John. I'll be going back and forth to New York. He said, could you do me a great favor? Anything, Sir John. What? He said, would you mind lunching with me while we're in rehearsals? What a sacrifice that would be. He explained, he said, when I'm directing, I need that hour away from the actors. They're so needy. And if I eat alone, they think they're doing me a favor by coming over. So if you would just lunch with me, and if it's not too inconvenient, oh, all right, I'll lunch with you. If I had only had a tape, if I only knew how to work a tape recorder, the wonderful stories about English theater that he shared with me about Ellen Terry, who I think was his aunt, about Michael Redgrave and Edith Evans and Peggy Ashcroft. And he told me 15 stories about Lattie before I realized it was Sir Laurence Olivier. Always a joy. So the show comes to New York. It opens in New York. Great hit. Every night in New York, you know, we had, when Richard and Elizabeth came out, it was the last show that came out every night. The curtain came down at 11:15, and the audience from every other play would come and get a glimpse of Richard and Elizabeth. We had police on horseback at each corner to handle the crowd. So the show's a big hit in New York. About a week after the opening, one of the women in Alex's office, Sir John is on the phone. He wants to talk to you. I said, well, why not? My luncheon buddy. Sir John says, dear David, I'm having some people over to my flat next Tuesday for my 60th birthday. Would you join us? I said, I'll have to check my social schedule. I looked at my calendar. It was free that night. I went there to his flat on Central Park West. I knew it was what it was going to be like, but I didn't. I walked into a room, and as I told my sister later, I was the only person in the room who had not been on the cover of Time or Life magazines. The first thing, Sir John grabs me and says, David, come, do you know Lillian and Dorothy? It was the Gish sisters. No, even I didn't know the Gish sisters. The silent movies was before my time. But that's what the crowd was like. But Sir John, Julie Harris, set a tone in the theater that I always looked for ever after, and sometimes would find, but they were the models that I would work with.
So I want to add that the Richard and Elizabeth being referred to are Elizabeth Taylor and Richard Burton, and then another part of that name-dropping story, I talk about my friendship with Elizabeth and my date with her. I always like to say I'm one of the few men that dated Elizabeth Taylor and didn't marry her, but had a wonderful friendship with her, and I appreciated her. And I couldn't help, as I point out in the show, name-dropping, that she was very pretty. So the book, Fortune in My Eyes, my memoir, a memoir of Broadway glamour, social justice, and political passion, tells all about how Fortune Society started out of a play. I will autograph it for you. With it is the 90-minute one-person show I did called Name Dropping, which I did as a one-nighter as a benefit for the Fortune Society. It was seen by a producer, moved off Broadway, and it got good reviews. I got reviewed in the Times and the New Yorker. So the package is yours for $50. The book, the CD, email me at droffenberg@fortunesociety.org. Give you a phone number. I will call you during the day. And we'll make arrangements for you to get an autographed copy of Fortune in My Eyes and Name Dropping. Now, I said I wanted to mention something more about Hurricane. I was going, you know, when you're during the pandemic, there isn't a closet or a drawer that I haven't cleaned. And cleaning is not my specialty. But I found this bag over the weekend, and it was cassettes. Remember cassettes of shows that I did in the 90s? And I started looking at some of the... just some of them, and I thought, boy, if I could make a CD out of some of these interviews, what a premium it would be for BAI. One was a great big, this wasn't a cassette, it was a reel of my interview with Hurricane, but here's some of the people that I found on the cassettes. Peggy Lee, Ossie Davis, Richard Russo, Pulitzer Prize winning author, Joy Behar, David Dirk, he was Serpico's partner, and it's all about the police scandal of its period. David Dinkins, Dorothy Loudon, Tony Hess, the son of Alger Hess, Olivia Goldsmith, who I adored. She wrote was it the Three Wives Club? It was about divorced wives, based on her own life. And of course, Hurricane Carter, and Jerry Herman, and Stephen Sondheim, and Jonathan Cazell, and Blossom Deary, and David Coppay. David Coppay being the first professional football player who announced that he was gay. So all of those, I would love to find somebody who knows to put them all together, extract them, and make a gift to BAI listeners as a fundraising thing. Wouldn't that be nice? Here's Ella and Louie. I guess this may be our final song. We're almost at time, aren't we, Kathy? Maybe I should just remind people. We offered this morning Stanley Eldridge's Poetry and the Systems Babies. That's for $35. The Betty Walker Hello Seal for $35. My book and the CD for $50. And to be a buddy. You can be a fortune buddy. And all of those are, that's the whole grab bag for today. Email me at droffenberg@fortunesociety.org, and leave your phone number and I'll get it back to you. Ella and Louie will take us out this morning before Holly Near does her theme, her parting theme. Ella, Louie, please.
With no kisses, a fine romance, my friend. This is, we should be like a couple of hot tomatoes, but you're as cold as yesterday's mashed potatoes. A fine romance, you won't nestle. A fine romance, you won't wrestle. I might as well play bridge with my old mate aunts. I haven't got a chance. This is a fine romance.
It's a fine romance with no kisses. A fine romance, my friend. This is, we two should be like clams in a dish of chowder. But we just fizz like parts of settler's powder. Yes, fine romance with no glitches. A fine romance with no bitches. Just as hard to land as to eat in France. I haven't got a chance. This is a fine romance.
You take romance and I'll action. At least they flap their fins to express emotion. A fine romance with no quarrels, with no insults at all. Morals, I've never mussed a crease in your blue serge pants. I never get the chance. This is a fine romance.
It's a fine romance, my dear judges. Two old fogies who need crutches. True love should have the thrills that a healthy crime has. Oh, we don't have the thrills that the march of time has. But I'm a fine romance, my good woman. My strong age in the wood. Woman, you never give the Arkansas a glance, though you like cactus plants. This is a fine romance. Fine romance, my dear Duchess. Two old fogies who need crutches.
True love should have the thrills that I. You know, Louie, we don't have half the thrill at the march of time.
Telling me, fine romance, my very good woman. My strong age in the world, woman. You never give the Arkansas Center plans.
No, I prefer cactus plants. This is a fine.
Louie and Ella, Kathy, thank you for staying with me this morning. I know we're going to go right to the hearings, aren't we, from here?
Yes, we are.
And so a little bit of Holly Near to get us out, and then we're going right to Washington, right?
That's the plan.
So everybody stay tuned to hear BAI covering the hearings in D.C. Thank you all for joining me this morning. I'll be on next Saturday at 8 a.m., and next Monday, and the time every week varies, so I'll let you know on Saturday when I'll be on Monday. Have a good week, everybody. Keep smiling. Wash your hands. All that. Holly?
We are a gentle, angry people, and we are singing for us. Colors. We are a land of many colors, and we are singing for our lives. We are a land of many colors, and we are singing for people. We are peaceful, loving people, and we are singing for our lives. We are peaceful, loving people, and we are back to your communities, to just take a moment right now to take the sound of this room into your heart, the look of your comrades, something that you learned, some emotion that you had, and when it gets discouraging and seems absolutely impossible, bring back this moment right here where you know that there were thousands and thousands of people who have worked with you over a lifetime to try to find what it means to be a peaceful person
what it means to be a person who